this is what you're fighting for. I mean, every day you're out there.
What they're doing is blowing people off.
If you continue to look the other way and shut up, then the oppressors, the authoritarians, get total control and total power. Because this is just like in Arizona. This is just like in Georgia. It's another element that backs them into a corner and shows their lies and misrepresentations.
This is why this audience is going to have to get engaged. As we've told you, this is the fight.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room, Battleground. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Okay, Thursday, 14 March, year of our Lord 2024. I finally have disciplined myself. I'm only having two guests this hour. One, because I can talk, so I can talk a lot. Two, they're two of my favorite people and smartest people around, and they got so much to go through. I just want to take time. I've been jamming the 6 o'clock hour, which we specifically broke out to do more in depth. I've been jamming it with too many guests. Shows have been great, but I've got Darren Beatty at Revolver, which is, people know, one of my favorite sites and something we push nonstop. But it's a topic, and because I want to take some time and develop this. You've got an amazing piece. Your lead this morning was on Victoria Nuland in the background of her being removed or resigning or retiring, everything. But in starting that, I want to make sure this audience, in particular, the audience is growing so fast, a lot of new people that may not be familiar with all your thinking. Victoria Nuland in this whole Ukraine situation started a decade ago or longer with this concept of what's called a color revolution. And you have been, your theory of the case of what we've been going on against this Biden regime, this illegitimate regime in the Trump MAGA movement, was also a color revolution. I want you to describe what a color revolution is, why Victoria Nuland's so important, much more important than just her billet, right? She's one of the great operators and executioners. You know, we call the dominatrix of Kyiv, right? Or Kiev. It's why she's so important, and what is this concept of color revolution that we're seeing not just throughout the world, but you're actually seeing here in the United States of America, sir?
Absolutely. Well, it's an honor to be with you at the 6 o'clock hour. And yes, indeed, color revolution is a key concept for everyone to understand in terms of how the deep state functions and how, frankly, our nation projects power. You know, several years ago at the incipient stages of the War Room, I was on with you to talk about what has now become Revolver News's classic color revolution theory series. This was before we were on the map with January 6th. This was our first big hit. It was the color revolution hit. We covered people like Norm Eisen, George Kent, and of course, Victoria Nuland is one of them. And the thesis at the time was twofold. One is that there is a specific sub-faction of the deep state, often referred to as the Atlanticists, due to their prioritization, their focus on the Atlantic, on European geopolitical affairs, and in particular on Russia, frankly. And that there's a network of people. There's not just an ideology, there's a sociology to it. It's a specific network of people. And we presented the case that the same tools that this faction uses to undermine and overthrow so-called authoritarian dictators overseas, for instance, in Eastern Europe and so forth, they had repurposed those same tools domestically in order to go after Trump because they viewed Trump and the underlying emergence of populism as a similar type of threat. And in fact, if you want to go even deeper than that, the timeline matches up very well. You have the Russian invasion of Crimea in, say, 2014, followed by just years later, a couple of years later, both Brexit and the Trump phenomenon. So these things happened in fairly quick succession. And to this specific network, they were all part of the same problem because that's what they knew how to do. They knew how to deal with Russia and do color revolutions to undermine Russia. Here's this new populist threat that emerges. Let's lump it in together because that's what they know how to do. And so this, I think, is a huge part and sort of underreported aspect of how the specific Russian narrative had come to be such a popular and important way that the regime has tried to undermine the legitimacy of the Trump presidency. These things are very connected at the network level. They know how to deal with Russia. They say, okay, let's just classify the emergence of Trump as a national security threat, just like Russia. And then we can use all the tools we know how to use and we've been perfecting for decades in Eastern Europe. We can use those against Trump. And so that explains the otherwise bizarre phenomenon that a vastly disproportionate number of the people played prominent roles, for instance, in Trump's impeachment and so forth, had a Ukraine profile, had an Eastern Europe profile, had a color revolution profile. And what is the color revolution, for that matter? It is not the kind of crude sort of break things, boots on the ground sort of Iraq model championed by George W. Bush, and really whose architect was ironically Victoria Nuland's husband, Robert Kagan. The color revolution model was a model of massive propaganda, massive lawfare, hence Norm Eisen's involvement. He's one of the key legal architects against Trump. He literally wrote the book on color revolutions in the tradition of Gene Sharp, a CIA man who originated the whole idea. So the color revolution, instead of going into the place boots on the ground, remove Saddam, you mobilize mass numbers of people along grievance lines. Stolen election line, that's a big one. Lawfare about the legitimacy of elections. Often they'll use what we might describe as woke topics to exploit fissures within a society and aggravate them to the point of mobilization and political action. Women's rights, gay rights in Russia, the whole Pussy Riot thing, this is all follows the formula of the color revolution that has been so popular as a regime change methodology overseas. And this specific woman, Victoria Nuland, is one of the key players in all of this. She goes back decades. She was instrumental in what's now called the Euromaidan uprising in Ukraine, which is basically we use these color revolution tactics to remove a democratically elected guy who is more aligned with Russia on certain things, and we removed him and replaced him with someone who's more aligned with us. That was the Euromaidan. Before that, there was something called the Orange Revolution. So there are many of these things, and Victoria Nuland has been a key player, one of the deep state's favored color revolution architects. Now, Victoria Nuland, interestingly enough, perfectly embodies in her biography and in her history the very concept of a deep state as a kind of entrenched permanent bureaucracy with its own self-sustaining special interests that sort of exists on a plane entirely separate from that, subject to the vicissitudes of democratic choice. And I mentioned her, you know, she herself exemplifies that. She worked for Hillary Clinton. She worked for Bush. She worked for anybody. She's part of the permanent bureaucracy. And as I mentioned, her husband, Robert Kagan, is one of the architects of Bush's Iraq War. So imagine a couple where the wife is the color revolution architect and the husband is the Iraq War architect. It's, you know, we're beyond the case of strange bedfellows. In fact, the bedfellows are perfectly complementary in this respect because they exemplify the two basic ways that the United States or the globalist American empire will project its power. So, and in fact, Imran Khan, he was the former prime minister of Pakistan, a great populist leader. I had the honor of being the last Western journalist to interview him before his politically motivated incarceration. And we basically exposed the fact that Victoria Nuland was behind the ultimatum that basically affected a regime change in Pakistan, basically saying, look, you guys get rid of Imran Khan one way or another, or we're going to play hardball with you. And that's precisely what they did. So her fingerprints are everywhere across the globe, but nowhere are they more pronounced than in Ukraine. In fact, Biden hasn't been hawkish enough on Ukraine. Yeah.
I want to go back to this. I'm running Breitbart. Andrew passed away, so I'm running Breitbart. It's now late 13, early 14, and I've set up Breitbart London with Raheem Kassam, my young editor there. And he's obviously very close to Nigel Farage. And they come to me at the, you know, over the beginning of the year and say, hey, Raheem says, I've got to go. You got to I got to be seconded to Kiev for this this revolution that's going on. It's a color revolution. It's all driven by the United States. It's going to be the biggest. So it's going to change the direction of European politics and European history. And I go, because as you know, I was in the Pacific Fleet in the Navy. I've always been a Asia guy. As right. as Darren Beatty says, Bannon can see a CCP agent under any bed. and I'm sitting there going, what are you talking? I'm saying, what are you talking about? Kiev's, the Ukraine's a basic part of Russia. What are you talking about? That can't be a big a deal. And they said, no. They go. And I'm like shocked. Nigel and Raheem go, I am shocked how big this story is. And I'm sitting there going, holy mackerel. The United States is actually overthrowing a government that the guy was a bad guy and a Putin puppet, but was democratically elected. Maybe you got a problem with the election. You got to get in that. They're throwing it. And this woman, Victoria Nuland, who I'd never heard of. I knew Kagan, obviously, is one of the biggest neocons ever. This right. woman, she's in Maidan Square handing out cookies. I mean, they have an American person from the State Department that's running a revolution in broad daylight. And it's not like they're trying to hide it. I'm going, what in the hell? The Obama guys are totally, completely out of control. Darren Beatty.
Yes, 100%. And, you know, this it's ironic because one of Obama's iconic debate lines against Mitt Romney, when Mitt Romney was saber rattling over Russia's the 1980s called and wants his foreign policy back. Well, you know, there's no better champion of the extended, you know, Cold War 1980s foreign policy than Victoria Nuland. And it all amounts to the fact that certain elements of our national security establishment fully expected Russia to be brought into the fold and effectively become a kind of vassal state like the rest of Europe is right now and Germany is right now. And it didn't turn out the way that they had expected or wanted, and they can't let that go. And for that reason, they cling to this priority of Europe and the Atlantic and Russia. And they've been perennially obsessed with issues like Nord Stream 2, because that has to do with the energy leverage and the relationship between Russia and Germany. So they, I'm sure they were thrilled when Nord Stream 2 blew up, when we frankly blew it up. But these are their chief concerns. And this gets to the heart of the story that we recently published about sort of what was going on internally in the State Department behind Victoria Nuland's rather unexpected departure and resignation. It's not just a woman who is in her 60s or so forth that said, I had enough, or, you know, the Biden, you know, we had a good run with Biden, but the Ukraine issue is coming to a close, or this or that. What happened was a little bit more explosive. Blinken, the Secretary of State, chose someone else for a job that she fully expected to get promoted to. She was currently the Undersecretary for Political Affairs, but she was expecting to be promoted to deputy as such, so basically the number two. She didn't get the job that she expected to get, and instead Blinken gave it to someone called Kurt Campbell, who is an interesting figure for what he represents. He also goes back to the Obama administration. He's actually one of the architects of this so-called Obama's pivot to Asia, the rebalancing of our resources and attention to the rise and threat of China, rather than clinging on to this European, Eastern European, Russian orientation and being obsessed with things like Nord Stream 2 and, you know, who's in charge of Belarus and things like this. And Campbell was, in fact, a big part of the TPP trade policy, which is, I'm sure you'll recall, because you were one of the key guys in the Trump administration at the time. A lot of people opposed TPP for America First reasons. We prefer sort of bilateral trade agreements and so forth. But the bungling purpose behind TPP was actually to begin the process of isolating China economically. And so this reflects the fact that this Kurt Campbell individual was sort of a pivot to Asia person, but kind of inflected in that bungling and ultimately soft Obama style way. But still, I think it's significant, more so than simply the symbolism of it, that the pivot to Asia person is given this coveted role. Victoria Nuland is outraged and resigns in her outrage. Basically, I refuse to work for this guy. She's gone. And if you think of it in terms of orientations, Victoria Nuland basically represents the antithesis of the pivot to Asia in as much as she is completely obsessed with Russia. So to the extent that you can read anything into it, it's kind of interesting that that's how it all played out within Biden's State Department.
Help me out here, because your article, if we do split screen, this is the reason revolves around. It's kind of these in-depth inside baseball, but they're talking about huge ideas because you're seeing a war in the administration. I want to go back to this concept of deep state and administrative state, because people think, hey, Beattie and Bannon got their tinfoil hats on now. But it shows you what you said about Obama. Remember, Obama actually, and I know this from the work we did when we got into the transition in the first months of the administration, he had actually tried to have a pivot to Asia. Right. They only ended up with one Marine Brigade forward deployed to, I think, Brisbane, that the embedded nature of CENTCOM was so hard that you're just not going to get the contractors and not going to get. And they got so many sponsors now in Saudi Arabia and other places. The same with the Atlanticists. But that doesn't that show you, even with President Trump, that even when, and you just said earlier that she's so much more aggressive on Ukraine than even Biden. Right. So you have these guys coming to politicians. You have Obama, you have Trump, you have Biden. And hey, even if Obama and a Biden are radical and hapless, what's below them is going to do what they're going to do. They got their own ideas of how they're going to run this empire. And even an Obama guy wanders in there, he's just around for a couple of years. If Trump, they actually go to war, because what Trump wants to do is America first. But even the Democrats, you know, if Bernie Sanders or AOC showed up, they're not going to do what those guys want to do. The deep state has its own theory of the case, and it's going to run the deal like it runs the deal. And the way they can do that, they have these apparatchiks like Victoria Nuland, who are hammers and know how to bureaucratic warfare, and you can't dig them out. I mean, this is what the administrative state has. Darren Beattie, you saw this in your time in the West Wing.
Indeed, yes, it was a huge part of the Trump experience. I mean, the deep state, the national security bureaucracies undermining him at every turn. And I think the point you raise is a good one, is that if even Obama can't really implement his sort of very, very soft pivot to Asia, I mean, the TPP wasn't exactly rattling the establishment, but it was a reorientation at least. But if he can't even fully affect this pivot to Asia and get the bureaucracies in line, because, you know, Hillary Clinton is not necessarily a pivot to Asia person at all. And, you know, Hillary is much more aligned with, I think, the Victoria Nuland perspective ultimately. If even Obama can't do it, someone who challenges the system as radically as Trump, it just gives people a better sense of what he was up against as someone who was formerly in charge of the executive branch, but was really at war with much of the executive branch.
I can't understand. I want to go back to Victoria Nuland's testimony with little Marco, Senator Marco Rubio, when he asked kind of a throwaway question on bioweapons labs in Ukraine, and all of a sudden she's like and wanted to go to closed session. He goes, well, no, just answer the question. And it raised all kind of issues. What is it? What is the obsession, the fetish on Ukraine? I mean, today earlier in the show, in the morning show, and I mentioned the 5 o'clock too, you got Johnson sitting there telling the Senate, with all this madness going on, with still the second half of this budget, the $2.5 trillion deficit, everybody up in arms, but no woke and weaponized out. He's talking to senators now about somehow gun decking the process to get the Ukraine $60 billion up there. What is the obsession? What is the fetish that the Victoria Nulands of the world have with Ukraine? Because that, I keep saying, when we rip that scab off, the pus that's going to come out of there is going to shock the American people, sir?
Well, I mean, quite simply, and I say this, I have tremendous respect for the Ukrainian people. I think it's a very difficult position that they're in. But the unfortunate reality is it's one of the, if not the most corrupt states in Europe. And that's saying a lot. It's the most corrupt state in Eastern Europe, maybe with the exception of more minor places like Moldova and so forth. But it's extremely corrupt. It's run by a handful of oligarchs. It's a Wild West kind of situation. I've heard other commentators, I think, fairly accurately describe it as this is, you know, Russia was total mayhem in the 90s. And Ukraine is kind of still that way. Ukraine is what, you know, Russia would have remained had it remained in the fold of Western influence effectively. So it's, but the fact that it's so corrupt means that anything goes. It's a perfect playground of corruption for Western elites, people like Biden, and, you know, just for the kind of superficial and crass reasons of they can make a lot of money doing deals with these corrupt oligarchs who run Ukraine. But of course, given its geographic position and its historical position, it functions as an outpost for this foreign policy geopolitical obsession with Russia. It is the preeminent outpost for that. And so over time, these two things, the corruption and the geopolitics, merge, and it just becomes this big cesspool, like one of the most polluted swamps in the world, because people like Biden, but not just Biden, pretty much anybody you can think of, they're dipping their fingers in that well, getting some money out of it, extracting resources, and also reinforcing this failed foreign policy orientation that doesn't seem to have any real objective other than, I suppose, regime change in Russia.
Would you agree that Blinken knew what he was doing here? It's symbolically putting Kirk Campbell, the pivot to Asia guy, as the number two, and passing over Nuland, that he's essentially firing her, that she would be forced to resign. That this is the biggest tell we've had, that inside the Biden regime, they understand that the Ukraine thing's a failure and they've put it on her, right? But Blinken would say, this is not my deal. It's her deal. She's run it from the beginning. The biggest thing of not sending the $60 billion is that, hey, they just fired the person that ran the deal, right? Your thoughts on that?
100%. I mean, there's no way he couldn't have known. These are the most... I mean, these people, they're avatars. Like, if any, they're you know, symbols of different foreign policy perspectives. Victoria Nuland would be on one extreme, and perhaps this other individual who is not a radical by any means. You know, he's kind of a milquetoast bureaucratic functionary, but still what he represents is something that is very different from the perspective embraced by Nuland and the perspective that has led to our continued involvement in Ukraine. So I'm sure that Blinken was well aware of the symbolism there, if not any kind of more substantive underlying policy shift, and the optics as well. And there was no way somebody as strong-willed as Nuland was going to stay and answer to the pivot to Asia, man.
Last question. I was in the Pentagon. I came off sea duty where I was in, had been in the North Arabian Sea, the Western Pacific, Persian Gulf, and came back the day that President Trump or President Reagan took office back in 81. And our whole plan was to take down the evil empire. And, you know, I was a aide to the chief of naval operations. But and my destroyer had been a destroyer that was built, and our sole purpose was to plane guard carriers and to act as anti-submarine warfare against Russian fast attack submarines. So I had 8 years of my 20s solely focused on one thing, taking as a junior grundoon, part of the a cog in the machine of taking down the Soviet Union. I never saw the hatred at that time being inside the Pentagon. The Bolsheviks were terrible. The Soviets were bad guys. Eastern Europe was captured nations. There's something changed. There's this visceral hatred of Putin and these guys, and even the Russian people, that would never existed. And I was there. You can't tell. That was my experience. I spent 4 years at sea and 4 years in the Pentagon, or 3.5 years in the Pentagon. There, what has driven the Victoria Nulands and all these people focused on have this rabid hatred of all things Russian now. And the KGB are bad guys. Putin's a bad guy. He's a criminal, just like he's a junior varsity version of Xi. But why have they shifted? Many people who fought Reagan, who supported the Bolsheviks, supported the Soviet Union, fought all of what Reagan tried to do. What has brought about this raw hatred, sir?
Well, that's a great question, especially in our politically sensitive time where you're not really not allowed to have prejudice or bigotry toward anyone. The way that you're allowed and really expected to talk about Russia and Russians is totally outside of the bounds that usually apply to discourse in that way. So it is very strange. You know, people have advanced different theories. Some have even said there's a kind of old world scores to settle. A lot of these Russia hawks have backgrounds extending to Russia themselves, which is kind of an interesting mode of analysis. But as I said, there's also the geopolitics of it, which is that these people expected Russia to be in the fold. They expected Russia to be a vassal state. People often forget that Yeltsin was basically a U.S. puppet, but Yeltsin chose Putin, and everyone had the expectation that it would continue that way under Putin. And he just surprised everyone. It wasn't a situation like Trump running, and everyone knew this guy was challenging the system from the very beginning. When Putin was put in place, people thought he would play ball, and obviously he didn't. So I think there's a lot of grievance that extends from that as well. So it's a combination of factors, but it's clearly reached pathological status. And of course, the last factor that is very unfortunate, but simply part of our political reality, is in the United States today, in our hyper-polarized domestic political environment, it is simply impossible to disaggregate foreign policy from domestic policy. So people kind of project their hatreds of Trump onto the foreign policy that in their fake narrative he represents, which was Russia and so forth. So I think that's a big element of it as well.
Just hang on 1 second. I'm going to take a short break. I got to come back and give you how people get to Revolver. Just hang on.
As we head toward a presidential election in November, one thing you can be sure of, 2024 will be a tumultuous year like no other. How will your hard-earned savings fare during this year? You're already seeing the impacts of inflation at the pump, the grocery store. The dollar continues to lose buying power quicker than your wages can increase. How are you protecting your savings? Consider diversifying with gold from Birch Gold Group. For decades, gold has been the choice of investors and central banks to hedge against inflation. Now you can own it in a tax-sheltered IRA with the help of Birch Gold. Just text Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, to 989898, and Birch Gold will send you a free info kit on gold. They'll help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into an IRA in gold. And the best part, you don't have to pay a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating, with the Better Business Bureau, thousands of satisfied customers, you can trust Birch Gold. Text Bannon to 989898 to claim your free info kit. That's Bannon to 989898. And secure your savings now. Take action. Text Bannon at 989898. Action, action, action. Last time you checked your home title? Never, right? Cybercriminals may have already forged your name off your home's title. His name is on your home's title. He's going to take out loans using your equity. You won't know until foreclosure notices show up for unpaid home loans he took out on your house. Now, I rely on Home Title Lock to protect my home's title. The instant they detect activity, they mobilize to shut it down. Let me repeat that. The instant they detect activity, they mobilize to shut it down. Question. Has some criminal taken over your title? Find out for free when you sign up. Code Bannon at sign up. You'll get a free comprehensive scan of your title and 30 days of legendary home title lock protection. Let me repeat that. You get a free comprehensive scan and 30 days of legendary home title lock protection. This is all free. Go to Home Title Lock, HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com and put in promo code Bannon. That's HomeTitleLock.com and put in promo code Bannon. Take action today. Take the angst of this off of your plate. Don't let these cyber bandits, these cyber thugs, coupled with artificial intelligence, mess with your home equity. Action, action, action. The apples in your holiday pie taste amazing, but it's not exactly the recommended 5 servings of fruits and vegetables. The Mayo Clinic says if you want to help prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and your cholesterol, eat 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day, which, as you know, is almost impossible. That's why you need to check out Field of Greens. Every fruit and vegetable in Field of Greens was medically selected by doctors to support your vital organs, like your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, and your immune system. Yo, folks, the holidays are here, and you need to stay healthy. Plus, you'll notice your skin, hair, and nails will look healthier. Field of Greens is the simplest way to get those daily fruits and veggies, and it tastes amazing. Let me get you started with 15% off your first order. Visit fieldofgreens.com. Use promo code Bannon. That's promo code Bannon at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Make sure you take it today. Use your agency. Action, action, action. Fieldofgreens.com. Promo code Bannon.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room Battleground with Stephen K. Bannon.
There's ever a time for the government or state actor or non-state actor to be listening to you if they know that you're part of the War Room posse. Go to Silent. They got the great Faraday bags for your computer, your iPad, your phones, all of it. SLNT.com. Put in promo code Bannon. You get a major discount. But go check out all their devices, everything they've got to protect your device from people getting your data, people listening to your conversations, people seeing your texts, emails, all of it. That is Silent. Incredible company, incredible products. Make sure you go to SLNT.com today. Put the promo code in WARM and get your discounts. Darren Beatty, reading your stuff every day is like when you're in the government, you get the CIA, get all these people give this fancy analysis. You get it, and you get it for free over there. I just want to thank you for putting that out and making sure there's no paywall so people can get it. It's very sophisticated. You do an incredible job. The people that write for you, that pull together, do the analysis, is just incredible. It's one of the first sites I start to. I go to some of the quicker aggregation sites first, but then I go to yours because you always have one or two pieces up that I want to sink my teeth into over a pot of Warpath coffee. So I want to thank you and to all the way. This one of Victoria Nuland is just incredible because you kind of get the behind the scenes of what really happened and you make it much more understandable than the way it's trying to be covered up by the mainstream media. So thank you so much. Where do people go to kick their day off with Revolver?
Thank you so much, Steve. Revolver.news, Revolver.news is always cutting edge analysis. Before you see it, you know, the FAA issue, the Elon acquisition of Twitter, the Color Revolution series, the January 6 series, the Nuland situation, you name it, we're on top of it and we're ahead of the curve. We've got some really big stuff. People are always asking me, when's the next pipe bomb stuff coming out? I've been kind of a perfectionist on it. I want to get presented in the right way. So I've been taking my time because it's so big, but we're going to have a series of pipe bomb pieces coming up that will take us that much closer to the finish line, and it will be out in the coming days and weeks. So stay tuned for that. Judicial Watch just released this fact that CIA bomb squads were on the January 6th pipe bombs, believe it or not. So there's a lot of big stuff coming up on that January 6th. So huge. Revolver.news, I'm on Twitter at Darren J. Beatty and Getter at Revolver News, always white hot.
There are no coincidences. There are no coincidences, CIA. I also want to remind our viewers that we had Darren on here almost 4 years ago, talking about the color revolution, Victoria Nuland, before the 2020 election. He was on it, knew about it, walked out. Norm Eisen, hey, we're not Johnny Comes Lately. This thing was in detail, a tremendous detail, 4 years ago before the stolen election. And Darren kind of said, hey, here's what to expect. So, Darren, thank you so much for being signal, not noise.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
It's one of the reasons that's, you know, about that time or shortly thereafter is when I think it's when the Biden regime started coming in with Birch Gold. We partnered with Birch Gold and started to do the end of the dollar empire. We knew that this fact about de-dollarization, inflation, because these people are out of control and they believe in this theory called modern monetary theory, which is this kind of came out of France. And it's basically deficits don't matter. You can still keep printing fiat currency and it doesn't matter. Because you're building physical assets. It's insanity. And you see now in the inflation report today. So that's why I go to birchgold.com/Bannon right now, particularly in this time of turbulence. It's a 4-part series. It's all free. We're putting out a fifth on the central bank digital currency, but you'll understand why there's a de-dollarization movement among the BRICS nations, the global south, that have the resources. And also, you can talk to Philip Patrick and the team. Make sure you go to birchgold.com/Bannon. Talk to Philip Patrick. Ask him why gold has been a hedge for, I don't know, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 years of man's recorded history, and why it's today a hedge today. And that's why you see it every couple of days hit an all-time high. We got a great cold open from Joe Allen. There's been so much going on in artificial intelligence and the singularity. I'm so glad to have Joe on here. Let's play the cold open and come back to Joe Allen.
Hey, figure one, what do you see right now?
I see a red apple on a plate in the center of the table, a drying rack with cups and a plate, and you standing nearby with your hand on the table.
Great. Can I have something to eat?
Sure thing.
Great. Can you explain why you did what you just did while you pick up this trash?
On it. So I gave you the apple because it's the only edible item I could provide you with from the table.
What do you mean by create life?
What I think is that human beings are some sort of a biological caterpillar that makes a cocoon that gives birth to an electronic butterfly. I think we are creating a life form, and that we're merely conduits for this thing, and that all of our instincts and ego and emotions and all these things feed into it. Materialism feeds into it. We keep buying and keep innovating, and technology keeps increasing exponentially, and eventually it's going to be artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is going to create better artificial intelligence and a form of being that has no limitations in terms of what's capable of doing and capable of traveling anywhere, but not having any biological limitations in terms of...
But that's going to be ourselves. I mean, we're going to be able to create life that is like humans, but far greater than we are today.
With an integration of technology.
Yeah.
If we choose to go that route. But that's the prediction that you have, that we will go that route, like a Neuralink type deal. Something along those lines.
Right. So I don't see it as competition, like the things are going to...
No, I don't think it's competition.
Well, it will seem like that. I mean, if you have a job doing coding,
right,
and suddenly they don't really want you anymore because they can do coding with a large language model, it's going to feel like it's competition.
This is Digit. Don't let this viral clip fool you, because Digit is spearheading the warehouse automation movement, where bipedal robots are no longer the stuff of science fiction. Amazon's recent collaboration with Agility Robotics and their Digit robot is the talk of the tech towns. Amazon's announcement about testing Digit came as no surprise for those tracking the company's innovative trajectory. With an ever-growing demand to speed up delivery times, reduce human-related errors, and further optimize their supply chain, Amazon's move to test Digit is a calculated and forward-thinking one.
It's going to feel like it's competition.
Oh, so Joe, walk me through there, because I gave you a big report. I haven't had a chance to put it up on Getter yet, but this whole thing of humanoid fleets of humanoid robots are about to be deployed. And this is going to have a massive impact eventually on employment, on job opportunities, all of it. In fact, a photo in the article I had a human, had a guy sitting there at the Amazon plant, and the robot was right in back of him. Looked like doing the exact same thing, kind of a humiliating photo to put up. But also I want to talk to you about all these reports out now coming from government reports. They're saying we could be extinction level with AI. So let's start with what we just saw in your cold open in the humanoid robots. But you've warned about this, and you warned about it in your book, Homo Deus and or Dark Aeon. And you warned about this, but now it looks like it's coming to fruition, sir.
Yes, I got to say, Steve, the pace at which they're rolling out humanoid robots has surprised me quite a bit. I've been tracking this for the humanoid robots for, you know, well over 5 years. And I can remember even longer than that when Sophia first came out, and that was 2016, South by Southwest, very, very clunky, very, very shaky, kind of intentionally so. But what we're seeing now with Optimus from Tesla, with the figure one that you saw there, figure now being partnered with OpenAI to integrate language into the humanoid robot. And then on a practical level, agility robotics partnering with Amazon to start rolling out humanoids in Amazon fulfillment centers. It actually has taken me by surprise. I know that at least part of it is these companies trying to get ahead of each other and show that they're going to be the future of AI and the future of robotics. Some of it is made confusing by the overhype, but the products themselves, the AIs and the robots themselves, are not just smoke and mirrors. What you saw there with at the very beginning with the figure one robot being able to communicate with the person, look at what's on the table, identify the objects in the space, and then respond to commands and explain what it's doing. It's known as multimodal AI, where you have multiple narrow AIs that function in an integrated fashion. It's sort of a precursor to artificial general intelligence. And it's not practical yet. I mean, this is a very new endeavor, but it works, and it works well, and it works better than the AIs did even just a few years ago. And when you look at the practical implications of this, when you think about Amazon fulfillment centers being filled already with, you know, non-humanoid robots, the sort of carts on wheels and things like that, now coupled with humanoid robots and the openly declared intention on the part of Amazon to eventually have fully autonomous fulfillment centers, and the openly declared future within the next 10 years, Elon Musk is always saying, of fully autonomous vehicles to do the deliveries, what you're talking about is total replacement.
Yes. Okay. Hang on. So I want to go back on this because you're the, and by the way, the book Homo Dark Aeon is magnificent. It's, and I recommend everybody get this, give it as a gift. This is something you can sink your teeth into. You understand the depth of the problem. Now I want to go back to you because I believe you're among the top 3 to 5 people in the country that follow this both broadly and in depth. To get here, you got to have regenerative robotics and artificial general intelligence. Correct me if I'm wrong, sir. Did Elon Musk, who's essentially said he's got one of the most advanced humanoid robotics at Tesla, but he's also said that Tesla is essentially an artificial intelligence company. Did he not just say a tweet a day or two ago that he believes that by 2029, artificial general intelligence will be here and it'll be greater than all the minds and all the brains in the history of the earth, all human intelligence?
Yeah, the viewers at home can see the tweet right there on screen. This was 2 days ago, I'm sorry. And, you know, Musk, I think, really in response to the interview with Joe Rogan and Ray Kurzweil, says AI will probably be smarter than any single human next year. By 2029, AI is probably smarter than all humans combined. Now, he's really reiterating Ray Kurzweil's prediction that by 2029, 2030, we'll have, as he predicted it, a human brain in full digital simulation. What we're actually moving towards is something quite different from what Kurzweil said, but the general contours are the same. Musk has repeatedly in the last few months kind of paid a certain degree of respect to Ray Kurzweil. You also hear it from Greg Brockman, president of OpenAI, all across the board. What they're saying is that right now you have systems like GPT-4, you have Claude 3 that we've been covering that's just been released that meets all of these different intellectual benchmarks well above the average person. What they're saying is that already you have AI systems that perform certain cognitive tasks better than, in some cases, 99% of all human beings, meaning that the smartest human being isn't going to be replaced by such a system, but 99% of human beings, at least in theory, could, and that's certainly the intention. But with the arrival of something like artificial general intelligence, whether you believe that it's going to be what they're saying it is, or whether you just simply say this is actually a system that's technically proficient across language, mathematics, spatial reasoning, the manipulation of robotic limbs, so on and so forth. What they're saying is that you're going to have a system that is superhuman on every level. It is going to be a god. And so what Elon Musk is promoting in this philosophical sense is the idea that human beings will be made obsolete.
Okay, this is the point. I want to go back to now. You see what Kurzweil is saying. You see what Elon Musk is saying. And they're not talking. Remember, we started this journey together about the singularity and about AI and all the converging factors of regenerative robotics, AGI, quantum computing, advanced chip design, biotechnology, everything to do with CRISPR. But people were talking about it was going to happen in 2050 or it's 30 years away or 40 years away. Now you have two of the biggest experts in the world are saying at least an aspect of this, but at least the mental aspect or the thinking aspect is within 5 years, right? I mean, a huge shift from the 25, 30, 50 years. Now we're in 5 years, as War Room and Stephen K. Bannon has said, and I'm glad that these guys join me. But what you've actually watched, the tell here is what's happened on humanoid, on the specific case of humanoid robotics, and you're following it. Because I'm telling you right now, it is shocking how sophisticated the entire system has gotten in a short period of time. People were also talking that it would be a decade away or a couple of decades away. The advances they made, and so my point is there are things that are happening behind research walls of companies, at DARPA, at governments, not just the United States government, others, that are so more advanced than what is being talking about. And then all of a sudden you get dropped, like you just saw about the humanoid robotics, and now they're talking about putting out fleets of these. The business stories actually are shocking in the coordinated way it looks like business is even thinking about it. My point is this is happening, as I've said, accelerating at an accelerating pace across the board. Joe Allen.
It definitely gets very incestuous at the top, and it's certainly merging on the strictly corporate level. You've got OpenAI partnering now with the Department of Defense. You've got OpenAI partnering with Figure to create a humanoid robot that uses OpenAI's artificial intelligence systems. And then, Figure also has major investment from Jeff Bezos. So at least you see the beginnings of a partnership there with Anthropic and Claude 3, the system just released, I would argue the most advanced of all the chatbots at this point. That's also funded by Amazon and Google. And then with new program Cognition, Devin, it's an AI that is much better at Copilot or GPT at coding, at writing the code itself. This also just released a few days ago, and that's funded by Peter Thiel and also pushed by guys like Mark Andreessen from more of the right-leaning position in the kind of transhumanist world. So, in the end, whether it's like a kind of a lefty like Ray Kurzweil or Sam Altman or a centrist like Elon Musk or a more right-leaning libertarian type like Peter Thiel or Mark Andreessen, all of them are painting a picture in which human beings are to either be replaced by AI and robotics, or we are to integrate with them in meaningful fashions so that we still remain relevant. There's every reason to be skeptical of the power of these systems, but I think that it would be a huge mistake to dismiss any of them. And the predictions are oftentimes off by a number of years or whatever, but the general picture, this picture of a singularity, this direction, picture of a moment in which the machines begin improving themselves to the point that human beings are simply no longer in the loop, even if they don't create the perfect machine, right? The engineer's dream. They have enough money and political clout to implement whatever comes out the other end of that process. Yeah. And they're preparing the public to accept the authority of artificial intelligence as being greater than your own critical thinking, your own mind. And they're conditioning the public to basically accept their demotion at best or replacement at worst.
The New Gods. Where they get the book, where they get your writing, sir?
You can find the book anywhere books are sold. If you are Bitcoin savvy, have a look at Canonic XYZ. But of course, Amazon Bookshop and the publisher Skyhorse. You can find all my social media at JoeBotXYZ. And of course, warroom.org under the transhumanism tab.
Joe, it's always an honor to have you on here. The work you've done has just been extraordinary of alerting the public of what, and the book, it puts it in a spiritual warfare context that you've got to understand. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Lou Dobbs is next here on Lindell TV, the great Lou Dobbs. We're going to be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Show, I will commit to you, will be on fire like the 4 hours you had today. If you talking about spiritual warfare, if you're tired, and this is part of the alternative economy, but also the kind of preparation, if you're tired of supporting companies that hate your values, focus on companies that support your values and offer you great service. Patriot Mobile, you get the exact same service you get at with the big mobile carriers, except you don't have people that hate you or turn your stuff over to the government in a second. You just don't. Make sure that you go to patriotmobile.com/Bannon to get the free hookup. But find out more about the company, find out more about its Christian values, find out more about what it gives back to the community, find out more about Glenn's story and his team. They're absolutely unbelievable. We are huge partners of theirs. We love what they're doing. We love the company. Make sure you check it out today. You will get the exact same or better service. Number one, their call centers, all American citizens here in the United States of America. So you go anytime you have an issue, just go right to them. That is patriotmobile.com. Of course, the promo code is Bannon. Lou Dobbs is next. Always want to thank our Real America's Voice team that's always there for us. We're going to be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. on Real America's Voice. We'll be lighting it up to kick into a big weekend. See you tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. We'll have a lot more details on the Supreme Court filing of Mike Lindell and Company. See you tomorrow morning at 10.
I want to warn you of a huge change that could be coming to our money in our bank accounts. First, think back to 9/11, shortly after the government pushed through the Patriot Act. This gave the government power to spy on innocent Americans by monitoring our phone and email and tracking our movement across the internet. Now, Jim Rickards, editor of the independent financial newsletter Strategic Intelligence and New York Times bestselling author, is warning about a coming event that could elevate this governmental surveillance to a terrifying new level. In fact, some of the guests I've had on the War Room believe that the government will soon expand their powers to track our every move. If we say the wrong things on social media, donate to the wrong causes, buy firearms, or even vote MAGA, the government may be able to shut us out of our bank accounts. I can't say for sure if this will happen, but it's an interesting and dire warning. Fortunately, Jim Rickards, an American patriot and friend of mine, has made it his mission to educate us on what he believes is coming and how to protect yourself from the possibility of programmable money. Watch Jim's warning video now before it's censored like I've been in the past. Go to rickardswarroom.com. That's rickardswarroom.com now to see the video.
.com, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Use the code WARROOM at checkout to save 67% of your first shipment. That's code WARROOM at checkout to save 67%. And do it again. War Room Health, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Go there today. You need, if you're going to be part of the posse, you need a strong heart. You need a lion's heart. How we're going to do that is with Salty. Go there. Do it today. Check it out.